This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Richard and Brandy with you this morning on the first day of the Euros. So, Rich has had an excuse to talk footballnomics. We've been having a chat to Jean-Paul McCurley. Now, he's the Vice President of Marketing and Sales for BN Media Group. They're the guys with the platform Todd, speaking to us not just what you have to put in place to be ready for such a big sporting event, but also how you beat the Pirates literally and technically at their own game. The new answer that they have come up with is not what you think. Surprised us and was fascinating to hear, if we do say so ourselves. We've also been doing Eidonomics, having a look at whether or not people are choosing to stay or go. Spoiler, stay seems to be the answer, both from the travel booking platform that we've spoken to, Mamoon Hamidan, Chief Business Officer from WeGo, but also from the local hotelier, David Allen of the Radisson Hotel Group. We also took advantage of speaking to both gentlemen to find out what forward booking and pricing looks like for summer. All of that, and we've had a really punchy economic forecast from the central bank. They are expecting GDP growth of more than 6% this year for the UAE on the back of more oil production. We've been getting the thoughts of Ed Bell, economist at Emirates NBD.
Right then, let's get some more detail on our big business story today. That UAE Central Bank report dropping yesterday. And the big headline for me, that number for next year, 6.2% growth is what the central bank is predicting. That is a bullish forecast this year. And the economy is doing well. We're at 3.9%. We've been getting the thoughts of the Senior Director for Market Economics at Emirates NBD, Ed Bell.
Yeah, a very strong outlook for GDP, headline GDP growth in 2025, more than 6%, which I think, yeah, does certainly raise some eyebrows, given that's a very rapid acceleration and kind of almost on pace with the sort of post-COVID recovery kind of phase of growth that we've seen in markets like the UAE. Looking down at the breakdown of what's going to be contributing to the growth, the outlook for the non-oil sector in the UAE is still quite positive. Growth of about a bit more than 5%. That's actually not too far off from what we're estimating for the UAE's economy, both this year and probably for next year as well, as there's been quite a lot of resilience to external headwinds like high interest rates, inflation in the non-oil sector. But I think what's different about the central bank's report versus, for instance, our own forecast for next year is that delta from the oil production. So they're seeing a very large rise in oil production next year, of about 8%, more than 8%. So that would be a big contributor to headline GDP growing quite rapidly.
So do you think that will actually come to pass? Because there's been big argy-bargy, if I can call it that, within the oil market this week. Wednesday, we had the International Energy Agency with its report warning of a staggering surplus of oil by 2030. That's not that long away. You and I spoke about that yesterday. But then on the back of that, Haitham al-Ghaith of OPEC Plus coming out fighting, saying absolutely not. He described that commentary as dangerous, saying the world is facing a shortage of oil. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that can feed into the oil GDP numbers for the UAE. One is investment. So it's not necessarily production, but increases in upstream capacity. And that's been very much prevalent from producers from ADNOC in the UAE, that they want to increase their production capacity out to 2030 to as much as 5 million barrels a day. So that kind of investment, that kind of capital that's being spent in the sector will help contribute to the growth there. But also there is that dispute, I think, within OPEC about what levels of volume can be brought back to markets for, the final quarter of 2024 and what degree it's going to come back in 2025. We had the OPEC Plus meeting about almost 2 weeks ago now. The UAE got a little bit more headroom than anybody else in order to be able to increase production for next year. So it could be that the central bank forecast is looking at that and saying, well, yes, the UAE has a sort of clear headway to be able to increase production. I don't know that the outline for the continued voluntary production cuts, though, would allow for as substantial an increase in oil GDP or oil production as what's being forecast here, though.
A quick word on that phrase from the report that I picked up on when it comes to the non-oil economy. It will soften slightly this year and next from albeit a very, very strong base due to what the bank calls stabilization of migration inflows. Now, that's not a lot of insight into the population of the UAE, but it's something. What do you make of this, Ed?
Yeah, I think on the first point, absolutely. While we're seeing sectors in the non-oil economy at a slower pace of growth, it's worth bearing in mind that that base is so much bigger now. So that the UAE is very much a sophisticated and very mature economy. So to have substantial sort of double-digit growth in some sectors like travel and hospitality, which we've had in the last couple of years as we've had the pandemic recovery, it's unlikely that that will be replicated year in, year out, just given that share of the economy or that part of the economy is so much bigger. So it's still quite positive that you have these growth rates, but they are coming off of a much bigger overall economy. In terms of the stabilization of migration flows, sure, that's something that we'd love to see more information about as well, to see what kind of what amount of people have moved into the economy since 2020. It's really been sort of anecdotal based. So we can look at things like private sector school enrollments, the number of people who are taking up phone plans, long-term phone plans in the country, all of which point to substantial population growth across the UAE, but we don't have really clarity on what the actual quantum has been coming in.
And that is Ed Bell, Senior Director of Market Economics at Emirates NBD.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, we're doing some last-minute Edonomics now. I walked through DXB, 6.5 hours ago. It wasn't too busy, but is that all going to change in the next 24 to 48 hours? We are looking at the business of Ed Travel. Take a little staycation, make a reservation. Have a stay in, baby, I can be your destination. There's a king-size beach down the hall. Yeah, are we staying or going? Joined this morning to put some light on this, Mahmoud Hamidan is Chief Business Officer of WeGo. Mahmoud, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome back.
Sorry, Mahmoud, even someone did hop off a plane 5.5 hours ago from an overnight flight. So I've got people who've been WhatsApping me from the airport for the last couple of days saying it feels like half of Dubai is at DXB. We've got some people locally telling us, no, everyone's looking to stay put, hotels, staycations, since the summer holidays are close but not that close. Who's right?
Well, I think it's more the stay and some sort of staycations that's coming back in the market at the expense of the international travel or, proximity sort of destination selection. Most of people with families decided to stay this Eid holiday. They found it quite short and very close to the summer holiday, which is going to basically start by beginning of first week of July. We have seen some sort of an uptick, obviously. We've seen lots of bookings happening to the nearby destinations, short distance, short trips, Oman, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Armenia. But we haven't seen VFRs, like visit families and friends, at all. So very little numbers for this vacation, for the Eid holiday, to places like Jordan or Beirut or Egypt. Not much, because we know that most of it's going to happen in 2 to 3 weeks' time, where many, many people are going to start to be traveling for longer period during the summer break.
Right. So people are waiting. They're holding on.
Most people with families are waiting. We see lots of solos and couples and group of friends basically going to like 4 or 5 days trip and come back during this week. But we see a nice unexpected sort of uplift with the hotels bookings in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi, in Ras Al Khaimah, which basically gets a bit slower at this point of time. But because of the Eid holiday, because of the 4 or 5 days break, lots of people chose to just end up with the staycation, spend good time, in any of the theme parks or any of the water parks, and just take it from there until the big summer break starts in a few weeks.
Of those who are traveling, who are hopping on a plane, what kind of prices are they paying?
Well, prices is the biggest topic at this point of time. So generally depends from destination or other. For this particular week, if we're talking about this break, some good deals were still available in the market, I would say, even at the last minute level, especially for those top 10 nearby destinations, I would say. Prices didn't change much. I think it's an increase of like less than 10% on some of those destinations. For some of them, it's even 1 or 2%. Mm-hmm. I'm talking in the lens of Eid, but if we talk about summer, then it's different completely. I mean, prices are really high to some destinations. place like Jordan, for example, increased year over year at the rate of 64%. Egypt is almost at 40+%. India is around 30 to 34%. And knowing how many flights we've got operating to India as a scheduled flights every single day, that's a huge increase. But an overall view on the pricing, I think this year is technically cheaper than last year at the aggregate. So it's around 15 to 16% less than last year's airfares.
And what kind of window do you have on the bookings for summer? How busy is that summer travel going to be?
It's going to be very, very busy. It is a last-minute market here. It hasn't changed. We all thought that's going to change during COVID, post-COVID, but it didn't happen. So far, the lead time is up to 1 week to 2 weeks in most of the cases. We've seen certain percentage of our users booking 2 months in advance, but not more than 2 months. But big chunk of those users or travelers are going to start booking right now, actually. And we see a huge surge in terms of number of searches and bookings starting now for July 5th onward.
What about coming in? We've had a discussion with a number of people in the tourism industry about the flattening out of seasonality, about summer becoming maybe more attractive for people to travel. Do you see that in bookings inwards to the UAE?
Yeah, we do. Of course, we do. I mean, it's been the case for the past few years. There's lots and lots of, you know, sun and beaches seekers from around the world who actually like to come to Dubai at this point of time, or to the UAE in general. Lots of packages being put in place, especially in markets like Europe, like the UK, like Germany, some of Scandinavian countries, where for them experiencing this kind of weather and experiencing the sun and you know, the activities that can be done by the beach or in the, you know, in the desert doing the safaris, all this kind of stuff is just a nice package to do. So I don't think it's going to be much of a dip. We haven't seen that in the past few years as well. Practically, I think if you look at seasonality trends, there is no more low season, I would say, in the UAE, especially Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah, and Yas Island particularly. I don't think there is really a low season. There is some sort of shoulder seasons every now and then that come right before the peak. And there's a lot to do in Dubai as well during the summer break. So we see a good demand coming, but mostly from abroad rather than the proximity markets.
There you go, Mamoun Hamidan, Chief Business Officer at WeGo, in the run-up to Eid, telling us how busy it's going to be. Thank you for your time.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
What about the health of the hotel markets coming into Eid? Walk-on music there for Dave Allen, Cluster General Manager for Radisson Hotel Group, and our Eid weather forecaster for staycations this morning. David, good morning. It's nice to speak to you.
Good morning, Brandy. Thanks for having me back.
So what's the forecast for Eid? How full is it at the inn?
From the resort side, it's very, very strong, as you would expect. Our resort, Radisson Resort in Ras Al Khaimah and Marjan Island, is essentially full for the next 5 days, which is very encouraging. For our Dubai hotels, it's a little bit softer. We're looking at occupancies at the moment of around 60-65%. But we're still picking up for the Eid period. It's a very short lead time.
Who's booking?
Everybody. We have a lot coming from Kingdom for the Dubai hotels. For the resorts, we have a number of Europeans. We have a significant number of staycations as well. I think that's impacted to an extent by the Eid period being Monday and Tuesday off rather than a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So some people have decided to stay a bit more local. And we feel that to a certain extent in the Dubai hotels as well.
Yeah, we've spoken to the guys from WeGo this morning. They say that staycations are the winners over international travel because, as you say, it is a shorter Eid. What does that mean for staycation rates? What's being charged, not just by you guys, but I know your friendly competitor GMs as well?
You know, in my hotels, we're exceptionally good value for money, Brandy. So, I mean, I can't speak for some of my colleagues, but what I will say is, certainly in Dubai and indeed Abu Dhabi, we're looking at a slightly softer rate from the hotelier perspective, which is, of course, better for the consumers than you would expect for an Eid period. In the resorts, the rates are still relatively higher, but of course, that's based on demand.
What are we seeing happen to rates in general at the moment, David? If we look at the, June, coming up to the first half of this year, what have we seen them do?
We have, in the very recent period, the last sort of the end of May, last week of May, until now, then of course the rates have started to go down. For the first half overall, we've seen significant growth in rates, certainly over 5% in our hotels. We've also seen a growth in occupancy and demand across this period. So it's been a very healthy start to the year, and I wouldn't want to be too negative about the impact that summer is going to have. What I will say is summer looks a little bit softer than we expected, but not dramatically so. I mean, there's still demand coming, and as I've said about four or five times already, it's incredibly short lead at the moment.
Let's look into both of those things. First off, summer. We've spoken to a number of people who've said, look, there's not really high and low seasons for the UAE anymore. It's not the dramatic up and down. What do you find?
It's not quite as dramatic an up and down, certainly, in the years that I've been here. The shift isn't quite as big, but it's still a low period if you take into account the rates that are in the market against a reasonable drop in occupancy. Certainly compared to Q4 and Q1 of the year, where, of course, the strength lies for the UAE, then it is a low period, but it's not as bad, that's a terrible turn of phrase, but it's certainly not as poor as it used to be. It's getting a lot better. It's a different customer set that's travelling, particularly to Dubai in the summer months, than is coming to Dubai more from a business perspective and a group's perspective in Q4 and Q1.
What about those lead times? Are they getting shorter? And if so, what's the theory?
People are just settling when there's a softness to the rate. People are waiting for as long as possible and are playing the market. They are a number of people, for example, if they're traveling to Dubai, will book two or three separate hotels and then decide when they get here. A lot of our hotels, we offer very flexible cancellation terms, which, of course, is a benefit to the customer. And people are not 100% sure of their kind of longer term travel plans as well. I mean, even last night into this morning, we've picked up 10 points of occupancy for a Monday, Tuesday next week, which is quite a dramatic pickup for a leisure period.
While we've got you, and speaking of leisure and enjoying oneself, we've got a strong football focus on the show this morning. What does it mean for your F&B? What does it mean for football,
Footfall for the football. We expect an awful lot coming from that. The bookings that we have already are very encouraging, particularly with the opening game happening tonight. I should also add that the T20 Cricket World Cup is helping drive customers to our outlets as well. We have erected outdoor tents in our hotels in Canalview and a waterfront with large screens in order to kind of maximise the experience for an awful lot. And the game times help us in that regard as well. And as long as Scotland win the tournament, then we're all going to be very, very happy.
Do you see a difference in the amount of punters you get turning up to watch a game between sort of summer and winter, if people are watching it in a tent as opposed to sitting outside?
No, the demand. In fairness, the demand is usually very high when there's a major tournament on. Even with the World Cup, the recent World Cup, we ended up putting tents outside as well because people preferred an enclosed atmosphere to sit with a group of people when they're watching it. And that we offered outdoor seating and indoor seating, and the demand for the tent seating was much bigger, surprisingly.
Surprisingly, right. If Tom was here, he'd ask you who was going to win the football. I'll ask you, but I'll have no idea what your answer means. Tell us anyway.
As I said, Scotland are obvious. I've got my tartan tie on today. Scotland are 100% going to win it.
David Allen, Cluster General Manager of the Radisson Hotel Group, speaking to us this morning. A little bit of last-minute Eidonomics. Still a bit of room in the inn if you're in Dubai, but not in Abu Dhabi and Ras Al Khaimah.
Yeah, there are still bargains to be had there. I mean, as David said there, they're only, what, 65% occupancy at the moment, so the rates aren't through the roof. I checked the Mandarin Oriental. For, I think it's Monday night.
I love
night.
The fact that's your bellwether, by the way.
Yeah, finally, with that and the three-star Ibis on Sheikh Zayed Road. Mandarin Oriental's 2,200 a night next week. It goes up to about 8 or 9, doesn't it, in peak periods? So I'm not saying it's a but, yeah, whatever. But pick your market. But the guys from WeGo, you spoke to them earlier. They said the same. Airfares down in Eid al-Adha compared to Eid al-Adha last year. It's summer. That the airfares are going through the roof to Egypt, Jordan and India with the three markets he picked out. But for your short break to Eid al-Adha, what was the message from WeGo?
Oh, that they are seeing, it's basically flat. Some are up by 10%, but some are barely up a percentage point on normal booking times.
And people are just doing little short breaks to places like Georgia.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Well, we're talking football and getting very excited because it's just a few hours until this happens. That is the official anthem of Euro 2024, and the official broadcaster is with us in the studio for this region. We are joined by, I'm delighted to say, Jean-Paul McCurley, Vice President Marketing and Sales at Todd, the official streaming provider in this region and elsewhere. JP, good to see you. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, busy night, 11 p.m. UAE time tonight, kickoff starts. What do you guys do in the hours before that?
Oh, look, I think it's been all hands on deck for the last couple of months, you can imagine, as we're preparing for tonight. So we've been sourcing talent, organising the shows, getting the programming ready, making sure to, you know, to prepare the best production that you can have and enjoy the best entertainment that's going to be offered this summer, I think.
Okay, so there's the streaming platform. And it's a lot of countries, isn't it?
Yeah.
Selfishly, I'm looking at the UAE because that's where I'm going to be watching it. And of course, we think about Doha, your home market, and the Gulf States. But you've got a big reach, haven't you?
Look, 330 million people sit in the catchment area for our grant of rights. You know, 24 countries, I think, across the footprint, right across to Morocco on one side. And as far as, I think Oman is as far as this side that we go.
How do you manage that in terms of the logistics of covering it and all the different languages that you have to pump out? Because again, I know whenever I'm watching it, you get a list of languages. Would you like to watch this match in French? Like, well, not really, but it's nice that you offer it. Great for me, not easy to do.
Yeah, look, that's definitely a challenge. And I think one of the advantages of being the streaming part of that platform is you do get to select that language as a part of the options that you can when you're streaming. Traditionally, you used to have to change the channel, if you remember. So be in English or be in Arabic, be in French are the sort of three broadcasts that you do. But the challenges are kind of extensive. Bein has properties up in Paris, and so we operate and create our French commentary from up there, and that avails us to all of our French-speaking North African territories.
So in terms of the Euro package that you're broadcasting, it's all of the games, isn't it? It starts tonight with the group stages and then it goes on for a month. Tell us what's going to happen.
Oh, look, all matches live and available, right? So from a Todd standpoint, you know, log in, find the asset that you want to watch or the match that you want to see and select and away you go. We've set up countdown timers on each of the main events so that you can find out when it's going to be and jump on and enjoy.
So you're part of Bein Media Group, which is the broadcaster for this region as well. Let's talk about the breakdown of who's going to watch it on what we would call traditional telly, either a satellite or cable or whatever it may be, and how many are going to be watching it on streaming? Because, you know, the lines are blurred now, aren't they?
Ah, for sure. And look, this question comes up a lot, right? What's the big difference between satellite and OTT? And we often in the industry, we talk about segments. And so we'd say, it depends on who you are and how you're used to watching it, right? So internet television or OTT is very convenient. And so as a convenience factor, we tend to find that the earlier generation picked it up sooner and therefore the crowd that step into our platform as a streaming platform tends to be a bit younger. But I think that's not necessarily the full story. I think that the device that you're watching on plays a big role in that position. So satellite sits in the set-top box and it's connected to your main screen at home, but OTT does the same thing these days. And so we're tending to find that line blurs quite a lot between who is going to be the younger youthful people that are watching it versus the elder generation and the homeowners that might be sitting at home to watch it. But sport's a social affair, right? So, you know, we don't necessarily expect you to go home and watch it on your own. And people, they pick up OTT for convenience reasons. So if I'm in the taxi and I'm running late, I'm going to turn on the Todd service and make sure I catch the first couple of minutes of the game before I arrive at wherever it is, the hotel, the place I'm catching up with my mates to watch it at, right?
One of the challenges that you and other broadcasters have is, of course, piracy.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about this on this show for the 20 years we've been going. When we moved here in the late 90s, what was it, Brandy? It was dodgy. It was illegal satellites on your balcony, wasn't it?
Illegal satellites on your balcony for the streaming, as it wasn't even called then. The DVD man for movies who came office to office.
Yeah, and then Pirate Bay and the dodgy box. Well, you know this very well. Yeah. The point is, piracy is an issue for official rights holders like you. How do you manage that?
There's two stories to address piracy, right? So obviously, as you broadcast and stream it, we work with the network providers to try and block the IP addresses to make sure that there's not access to it from a network perspective. From a streaming standpoint or the broadcast standpoint, you actually then set up quite a lot of sophisticated technology onto the stream itself to identify where the leak is coming from. Right, and then you try and plug the leak. So if I can see the number code on the screen that's coming from that source, then I can turn it off.
How effective is that, though? Is it just a sort of a game of whack-a-mole?
Sometimes you feel like you're shooting a BB gun at a freight train, right? So it's not particularly effective. And so I think what's interesting is, as a network, we start looking at ways to make it harder for the pirate to realise that you've cottoned on to the fact that you know the stream. Right. And so the stories that I'm hearing now is, rather than turn it off, you make it worse, right? So, you know, instead of, because everyone will see if the stream is stopped, the pirate finds a new source, they'll flip to a new channel, find another mechanism to hack into your network. But if you make the stream a little worse, they're less likely to realize that that's going on. So what am I talking about by worse? It's a bit fuzzy, it's a little bit delayed, you put some jerks into it, you can do a whole bunch of stuff to make the stream a little worse so that people are less likely to want to use that pirate and you affect their product.
I love that. That's brilliant. That's very, very creative. But of course, you want pull factors. You want people to come to you because it's great coverage and you do it better than anyone else. That is what you would want to have. How do you appeal to a younger audience? Because people like me, my generation, and I'm going to include you on that, sorry, I'm 52, we're used to watching a 90-minute football match and all the punditry that comes before and during and after. We'll sit there for 2-3 hours and do that. But will the younger generation, will the Gen Z and the ones younger than that?
So lots of stories around this space. Really interesting, right? So I think traditionally we all had a linear experience with sport. You sat on the couch and it was broadcast to you, right? And so one of the major changes in technology is that it's a digital delivery, and digital means two-way, right? So it becomes more interactive. So what's the next generation now doing? And it's far more social, but it's the interaction between social and watching that you're doing in an online environment. So, you know, from BN Group, what we're trying to do is introduce some features that make it more interesting and more personalized, right? So you can change the information that you receive about the game as the game is playing to you, the interactive timelines, the statistics about the player stats, and various other pieces of information that you can then use in a social context. So open up your WhatsApp whilst the game is playing on your phone and start messaging your mates. All of those sorts of things have been introduced to accommodate, if you like, the way that people are interacting with sports nowadays versus, you know, the generation above us, according to what we just talked about before.
Finally, who's going to win? You're neutral, you're Australian. You don't have a horse in this race. But in terms of the teams that generate the most eyeballs, we know, for example, in a FIFA World Cup, if Brazil does well, everyone will watch around the world. Who are the teams in Europe who'll get people watching here? We've got about 20 seconds left on that.
Oh, look, you know, the big guys out of Europe are always going to pull an audience, right? Spain, England, France, Germany. Big audiences on those four major categories for sure. Who's going to win? My wife is British, so I am biased in this scenario, but I think it'll be a tough comp. We've got couple of strong teams in the Champions League that came through from Germany. We had one out of Spain and one out of France. It's going to be anyone's game.
Hold that thought, JP. We'll ask you again in a month. Jean-Paul McCurley, Vice President Marketing and Sales at Todd, official streamer of Euro 2024. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.